this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon everybody and welcome to the Guy James Show. Hope you're all doing okay today. Hope you're having a good day, and I hope you have an even better this evening. Yeah, evening. After the debate, I hope we're all feeling very good, if you know what I mean. A lot to talk about today, but before I talk about anything, I want to wish one of our most loyal and great listeners, Ella, want to wish her the best of health and hope she gets to feeling better. Doggone it. Don't want to have any of you out there not feeling your very best, and hopefully she'll get back to feeling just fine in a short while. I hope it only takes a short while anyway. Hate to see anybody suffering with any malady of any kind, but she's feeling a little rough, so best wishes for Yellow. I do hope you'll join us on the program today. We got a couple of great guests coming up at 3:30. We're going to just check in briefly with Chris Gunn of the American Small Business League, and he's going to talk about how this bailout has affected small business SBA contracts and all. And coming up around 4 o'clock, shortly after 4 o'clock, we got Michelle Goldberg. And Michelle is author of the book Kingdom Coming, The Rise of Christian Nationalism. And she was recently, and this is why we're having her on today, she was recently in Alaska. Uh-huh. And she wrote some pieces, the pieces Sarah Palin, 21st Century Theocrat. She wrote that, and it's on Alternet, by the way. And she's going to talk about Palin's preacher problem and the anti-Semitic remarks that are just thrown around that particular church willy-nilly almost all the time. So we'll have a couple of guests today. We'll have input from you, won't we? Of course we will. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I don't want to go too far without talking just a moment about Kathleen Parker. I think all of you know who Kathleen Parker is. Kathleen is a syndicated columnist. She happens to be, and she's very much the conservative, very much the conservative. And she writes, in fact, our local paper here carries her syndicated column. And she wrote the article the other day calling for Palin to get off the ticket, if you'll remember. Well, things have not turned out too well. She's gotten death threats. She has found out just exactly what it's like on the other side of the the wrath of the right. And believe me, they've been nailing her hard and fast. So, and she's even complained about it a little bit. So, Kathleen, welcome. Welcome to the other side for a moment. Not that you're on our side, but I am glad that you've got a chance to taste the wrath of the right when they really go after somebody. She got freaked really good, I must say. See, the stock market's down 303 points today. I don't know where that'll lead. I really don't. We shall see. Will they pass the bill tomorrow, the bailout bill tomorrow? I think so. I think they probably will. Of course, we'll talk a lot about that today. And yes, there is a war still going on. In case anybody wondered, there is still two wars. There are two wars going on. Earlier this morning, suicide bombers killed at least 20 people in attacks on two Shiite mosques in Baghdad. Those folks getting along really well. The attacks were the second wave this week during a lengthy public holiday covering observances of Eid al-Fitr feast, which is celebrated at different times by Sunnis and Shiites at the end of Ramadan. And so they're still having their spats there, evidently. I did see where only 37% of the people in Iraq feel safe, only 37%, and I think only 24% think they've got any kind of an economy at all. So things a bit rough in Iraq, and they shall remain rough in Iraq for a long, long time until they develop some kind of a stable government. They're really no further along with that now than they were a year ago, evidently. And the same thing in Afghanistan. We're talking about dumping a whole lot more troops, at least 20,000 more troops, which we don't have, into Afghanistan. And the word is, in Afghanistan, and I think the Russians learned this the hard way. God knows, you would have thought we would have learned it as well. But more troops in Afghanistan is not going to work. The people hate outsiders to come in their country, and they will do anything they can to disrupt it. It's one of those things, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So all of these groups will get together. They'll fight like hell amongst each other, the tribes and all. And then they'll get together and fight against the U.S. if necessary. And that's just the way it is right now. And calling for 20,000 more troops, in my opinion, and in the opinion of many of those who are military experts, don't think it's going to do any good to send a whole lot more troops in there, so we'll see. And it would be wise for Mr. McCain, Mr. John McNasty, and God, hasn't he turned really nasty? Did you see his interview with the Des Moines Register yesterday? Ooh. Evidently, it must have been right after he read the polls or something. Man, oh man, he was nasty. I've seen him look really nasty before, but I think yesterday he about did as well as he's ever done before. My God, when that man decides to be mean, he can really get it on, huh? But anyway, the U.S. general in Afghanistan disagrees with McCain. He said the word I don't use for Afghanistan is surge, because as you all know, in last Friday's presidential debate, 2 weeks ago, McCain said that the same strategy that General Petraeus implemented in Iraq is going to have to be employed in Afghanistan. But McCain's claim was undercut yesterday when General David McKiernan, the new top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, stated emphatically that no Iraq-style surge of forces will end the conflict there. Speaking in Washington yesterday, McKiernan described Afghanistan as a far more complex environment than I ever found in Iraq. The country's mountainous terrain, rural population, poverty, illiteracy, 400 major tribal networks, and history of civil war all make for unique challenges, he said. And McKiernan stressed the word I don't use for Afghanistan is surge, saying that what's required is a sustained commitment to a counterinsurgency effort that could last many years and that would ultimately require a political, not military solution. Oh, where have we heard that before? A political, not military solution. And McKiernan went on to say that he doubts that another facet of the Iraq strategy, the U.S. military's programs to recruit tribes to oppose insurgency, doubts that that can be duplicated in Afghanistan. And he said, I don't want the military to be engaging the tribes. Don't forget, McCain called for a surge in Afghanistan, and Katie Couric asked poor Sarah Palin about a surge in Afghanistan, and she said, yes, a surge in Afghanistan will lead us to victory there, as it has proven to have done in Iraq. Boy, she's something, isn't she? It will lead us to victory in Afghanistan. A surge will, as it has done in Iraq, a victory. I think you better consult General David Petraeus should you think we have a, quote, victory in Iraq. I don't think Mr. Petraeus would, General Petraeus would agree with you. I don't think so at all. So here we are. We have the McPalin-McCain ticket bragging about our victory in Iraq, which our top general says we don't have, the man that they say walks on water, and I'm not disagreeing with their confidence in him, but here we have them at odds with their top general, with our top general, with Petraeus and McKiernan. McCain saying, yes, we need a surge in Afghanistan, and the general saying, oh, no, we don't. And we have Palin saying we have a victory in Iraq when
clearly David Petraeus has said several times that's not a word I would use to describe what we have in Iraq is victory.
So I think they better take a second look at that. Those are some things that are going on around the country with domestic, well, I shouldn't say domestic, with our homegrown battle-hardened heroes here, McCain and McPalin, telling us how to run a war. And don't forget, John McCain has said, I know how to fight a war, I know how to win a war, and I will win a war. And this is all coming from a guy that hasn't won a war. So, do you believe him when he says he knows how to run a war? And by the way, I did want to mention a little bit earlier, Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg said he's going to run again in New York City. Now, they have term limits there, and they're going to try and get them changed. So, and I don't think he even needs a vote to do that. I think he can get that done with himself and his city council, change the term limits there. So it looks like Bloomberg is going to stay on in New York. And I don't question whether or not he's done a good job in New York. I think for the most part he has. He's kept New York City on as solid a footing as New York City probably can be on, as mammoth city like that with all the services that they need and all the people that he has to deal with. I don't have a particular problem with Michael Bloomberg. Been a couple of police issues that I would certainly like to talk to him about. And another one of the miscellaneous things that I wanted to talk about today, I wanted to bring it up. I have it on good authority, and I wonder if any of you can find this out. I have it on good authority that a large supermarket chain in Florida, in fact, I'm not going to mention any names, but it's kind of like a big public supermarket, you know, if what I mean, but I'm not going to mention any names. I have it on good authority that they are passing a memo around to management of their stores and having the management show this memo to the employees and then having the employees sign it afterwards. I don't know if this is absolutely true or not, but I've now heard it from about five or six different sources that this supermarket chain in Florida is passing this memo around through the management. They're not passing them out to employees, but this memo is in the hands of managers. They're going around to each employee, having them read it, and then having them sign it, acknowledging that they've read and signed this memo, and it is saying not to vote for Barack Obama. It happens that I shop there at this large supermarket chain, and if I should find out that it's true, I certainly would do my best to keep my business away from them anymore. So, not that that'll break them up, but that would be something we would pound on here long and loud and make a big stink about it if that in fact is happening. I think that is wrong. In any employment situation, you have your employees at your mercy, and you have no business going around talking to them about political things. I feel the same way about churches. They've got no business going around telling somebody how to vote in a church. And even more so in a corporate environment where you've literally got your boot on the employee's neck. What are they going to do?
I mean, they can still go out and vote the way they want to, but you don't need to be intimidating employees by telling them who to vote for and who not to vote for. That's just plain wrong. Just plain wrong. Well, the bailout last night sailed through the Senate. I think it was, what, 75 to 24, Ted Kennedy not voting. Ted's still recuperating, and we do wish him well. But 75 to 24. And we have the list here of the folks that voted against it, and Democrats that voted against it are Maria Cantwell, Byron Dorgan, Russ Feingold, Johnson, Landrieu, Nelson of Florida. Well, pin a rose on you, Ben. Thank you. And Debbie Stabenow and John Tester and Wyden. So we have, 10? I forget. I didn't count them. But we do have some Democrats holding out against this bailout, some Democrats not falling for the hype. I was talking to somebody yesterday, and I said, you know, I think we all fall for this. And we do. We watch these people on TV. They go on the talk shows. They'll go on MSNBC, CNN, Fox, all that, these politicians. And they will go on there and tell us what dire situation we're in right now, that we've got to pass this. We just have to. It's not a good bill, but it's the only bill in town, and we have to do this to forestall a terrible catastrophe, financial catastrophe in this country. And that they're informed. They say we have to make an informed decision. And we have to vote on it. And I've heard others, some of them say, you know, if everybody knew what we know, why, you know what? I have news for you, Mr. Smarty Pants legislator in Washington, one of the 535. I think we do know as much as you know. I think we do. I think we have all seen the bill. I think we've all heard the consequences from economists, the potential consequences, both good or bad. We've heard them all. We've heard the top economists talk. We had one on this program yesterday. There are many, many, many experts in this country that know a hell of a lot more about this than probably almost any of the Congress critters. But for them to say, well, we made an informed decision. I know the public doesn't like what we did, but you know, insinuating that they know it all and we don't is just plain wrong. Now, while I will freely admit that a big majority of the public does not know, and I think that's been proven by all of a sudden the turnaround in the calls to Washington. We had everybody saying, no, 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 hell no, no bailout, no bailout, no bailout. Overwhelming deluge of telephone calls to Washington and emails. And then when it did not pass in the House, and the market went down 777 points, and they started going on TV, the legislators did, with this, oh my God, the sky is falling. We've got to do this, and we've got to do it now. We've got to bring it back. Then the public bought that argument, those who are not informed. They bought that argument and are running with it now. Oh my God. Do something. We don't like this bill. It's all wrong, but we've got to do something, and we've got to do something now. That just shows how malleable, how pliable the American public really is. Lemmings, yes. And I hate to say it in that stark of a term, but absolutely yes. The sky is falling, Chicken Little running, call it what you will, but the American public, in a matter of what, maybe 24, 36 hours, did an about face on this. Strictly because they had the fear put in them over the TV and over the radio by the powers that be that wanted this done. Though that is a fact. So do consider that when you're sitting there watching a so-called expert on TV, one of your elected officials, and they tell you that they're voting with an informed, with all the information available. do understand that many of you have every bit as much and the same information as they have. So this idea that we've got to put all of our faith and all of our trust in these legislators to make the right decision because they know and we don't, that's BS. And I think it would be good for everybody to remember that. I get caught up in it myself now and then. I'll watch a legislator who I have great respect for come on TV and say something, and the entire economy is going to collapse by noon tomorrow if they don't pass this, and I'll sit and watch. Gee, that's really something. If so and so said this, and then I come to my senses and go, wait a minute. I have just as much information about this as he does. Why is he saying this? And why am I sitting here giving him any credence at all? So keep that in mind. And then we have a goon like Joe Lieberman. Oh, Joe, please. Please. He says now we need to pass the bailout because it'll be good for John McCain. Yes, he actually said that. We need to pass the bailout because it will be good for John McCain. On Fox News today, Little Joe Lieberman was talking about the downturn in John McCain's presidential campaign. Downturn isn't a word for it. Anyway, he said that McCain is behind now because of the economy. Well, Mr. Lieberman, I would give that statement some credence, certainly. I say the economy is helping bury him, but one of the main reasons that McCain is heading down in the polls is because McCain is McCain. Ooh, is he proving himself just to be a complete ass lately? Wow. Anyway, Lieberman went on to say that he hopes the House passes bailout legislation tomorrow because it will be good for our country. There's a quote, it'll be good for our country, but frankly, it will be good for John McCain too, added Lieberman, explaining that it will get people back to comparing the two candidates free of a sense of crisis that may make them want to turn against Republicans. Ah, Joe. So, vote for the bailout bill tomorrow. It'll be good for John McCain. Yes, sir. And by the way, it might be good for America, too, but it'll be good for John McCain. Mr. Lieberman forgetting that Mr. McCain mysteriously still believes that the fundamentals of our economy are strong. He said that not too long ago. On September 16th, during a round of network interviews, McCain flip-flopped on his support of excess regulation in less than an hour. He has made one gaffe after another over it. He said he would fire the chairman of the SEC when the president doesn't have the constitutional authority to do that. And then he said, well, that he didn't mean the SEC, it was the FEC, the chairman of the FEC. Well, I don't know what the Federal Election Commission had to do that, but he got that one wrong again. And he says he can still balance the budget. I don't think if God himself takes over the government, he's going to come up with a balanced budget anytime soon, do you? And I also see that France is getting on the bandwagon. Yes, Sarkozy, who loves Bush so much and loves the American way, they're passing a $500 billion bailout themselves. Now, that is a more massive bailout for them, comparatively speaking, than it is for us. A $700 billion bailout for them, or for us, isn't near as much as a $500 billion bailout for them per capita. So that's a massive thing for France to be taking on. 866-546-5254. We're going to be going to our guest in just a moment or so. I do want to thank those House or the Senate Democrats that voted against that bill. I don't see any reason to have passed it. I don't see what's the hurry. And I see House Republicans who voted against the Wall Street bailout are now reconsidering their opposition, and we're going to tell you why a little later on.
as of yesterday, now the calls coming into their offices, they say, are 2-1 in support of congressional action. Wow. So, let me get this straight. The highly unpopular administration came in wanting $700 billion to buy junk, trash as they called it, and everyone's jaw dropped on the floor. You remember, just a couple of weeks ago, and 2 weeks later, they got the $700 billion plus new tax exemptions for their pet causes. And as well as a $2 million excise tax exemption for wooden arrow manufacturers. That's right, you heard that right. A $2 million tax exemption for wooden arrow manufacturers. Senator Gordon Smith of Oregon, who's up for re-election, got that little bit of pork to take back home. Senator Saxby Chambliss of Georgia, in a re-election battle with Democrat Jim Martin, and it's very close, was asked after his yes vote whether the bailout bill had become an issue in his campaign. He said, I certainly hope so, because it's absolutely the right thing to do. We've got Georgia banks who are crimped from a credit standpoint and aren't even able to make automobile loans today, Chambliss says. We have major employers who are having their lines of credit cut up, or in some cases canceled, and it's going to start costing us jobs. And he said, if my opponent wants to make an issue of it, we'll look forward to it. He said people in his state don't have the, here we go, people in his state don't have the full understanding of the looming credit crisis, but we're going to be educating him. I would maintain that, although I think Chambliss is a former educator, I don't know how much educating he's going to do. But the Focus Wednesday was they worked very, very hard on wooing the House Republicans, bringing them over. And they're bringing in the small business lobby and the banking lobby to buy. And let's just say it how it is, to buy the 12 Republican votes they need. Let's just tell it like it is. They're going to buy the votes, and that's how they are going to get it done. Plain and simple. We're going to pause for a break just for a moment or two and get our guest on the line, and we'll be right back.
John McCain has done more than just embrace George Bush's failed policy in Iraq. It's actually his idea to escalate the war there. It's John McCain's idea to send tens of thousands more soldiers to Iraq and to keep them there with no timeline for bringing them home. The McCain plan to escalate, going from bad to worse.
War is a racket, and fear is just a tactic to pull the wool over our eyes. The future isn't certain. Man behind the curtain, he hides behind his clever disguise. For peace to prevail, the truth must be unveiled. And I'll feel much better when George Bush is in jail. Cheney with a smirk on his face, he's laughing all the way to the bank. His Halliburton stock has gone through the roof. There's oil for Humvees and tanks. For peace to prevail, the truth must be unveiled. And I'll feel much better when Dick Cheney's in jail. What have they done? The king's cronies, the idiot's son, the new world order's begun.
think that's going to happen anytime soon. Anyway, but the time's probably passed for that. Welcome back, everybody. Good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. It's my pleasure right now to reintroduce a gentleman we have on the program fairly frequently, one of the friends of the program here that keeps us updated on the small business affiliations here in the country, American Small Business League, and what's good and bad for small business in the country. And as we all know, small businesses are the ones that provide the jobs in this country. Chris Gunn's with us. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, guy. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you with us today. And of course, our conversation today, what we wanted to talk about, and I know what you wanted to talk about, is very apropos because of this bailout business that we're going through right now. What's the connection with that in small business, actually?
Well, I think that there are a lot of connections with the bailout in small business. And one of the ones that we've really highlighted is a provision within the bill, Section 107, that we feel was snuck into the bill as kind of an unnecessary power grab. And actually allows, or would allow, rather, the Secretary of the Treasury to waive any provision of the federal acquisition regulations that he sees fit, given an emergency situation. But it doesn't stipulate what type of emergency situation. It doesn't give any type of time, deadline, or breakdown in terms of, well, you can modify the FAR for up to 90 days, or really anything else in terms of time or restrictions. It's an incredibly broad piece of legislative language. We think it has the potential to really kind of put small businesses in danger, because you're essentially giving someone virtually unfettered power to modify regulations that affect the way the government purchases goods and services from small businesses.
Well, that was one of the main criticisms of the original bill to start out with, wasn't it? That this man was asking for complete unregulated power over the financial concerns in the country, and now you're saying that they've slipped this in the bill that the Senate passed?
The Senate passed it with that provision in there. And you know, the funny thing about it is that most of the legislators that we've talked to were literally unaware of the provision or the potential consequences that it would impose on small businesses and the economy.
What percentage of these legislators do you think really sit down and read these bills?
You know, I'd say that they have someone sitting down and looking at the bills, but frankly, I think that the legislative offices are understaffed, the legislators that are working on these issues are overworked. This bill was 100 plus pages of very dense, kind of articulated legislative matter that was kind of pushed on legislators kind of in an incredibly quick way. They were unable to kind of go through it in a really deliberate manner that I think that they should probably have to. And as a result, many of our legislators just have no idea. Even members of the Small Business Committee didn't realize that there was a contracting provision that would give the Secretary this type of unfettered power over small business programs.
That's just incredible to me. And I understand that sometimes these people are heavily burdened with legislation and all. But I suppose you have as well. I've been around Capitol Hill quite a little bit, and I do see that in most cases it's the staffers that are overworked, that burn the midnight oil in the Senate or House office buildings, going through these bills, helping write bills, doing everything staffers do. But it's a sad commentary. You know, just before you came on, Krista, as a sidelight here, before you came on, I was talking to people and cautioning them that when they watch TV and see their favorite senator or House member on there telling them, well, I voted this way because I'm informed on this issue, and I know the electorate probably isn't, but you got to trust me, that many times they don't have any more information than you and I have.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. Many times it's almost worse because they're actually aware of provisions of the bill that would be bad for certain portions of their constituency, but vote for it anyways because there's maybe something in there that they think is really good that they can hang their hat on. And those other things maybe get swept under the rug. And I think that we've seen that with this bill. It's a you know, kind of a series of compromises, but those compromises come at a cost. And you know, they're going to be paid for by someone, and in our mind, it's going to be small businesses, and really, you know, that essentially anyone that is kind of falls within the parameters of the middle class economy.
Chris, just how bad is it right now in the small business world? You know, I was talking yesterday with some folks about the SBA, for example. I don't know what the requirements are anymore, but back in the day when the SBA first was formed, and it really was to get small business some help, and I'm talking small business, Joe down the street to put in a store or whatever. But it's gotten out of hand for that, isn't it? And is it really for the small business anymore?
Well, you know, I think the Small Business Administration may be there for small businesses, but they don't have the budget or the staffing to really handle those responsibilities in any kind of profound way, or in the way that we think they should be handling those responsibilities. Right now, things at the SBA probably couldn't be worse, given the financial crisis, given the fact that you know, their budget is half of what it was when Bush took office. You know, in terms of the financial crisis, the SBA is actually unable to, in many cases, actually provide small businesses with the loans and really the liquidity that they need for their businesses to function effectively within even their local markets. You know, I've talked to dozens, literally dozens of small business owners have called me in the last 2 days. You know, complaining that, well, you know, I can't get the type of funding that I need, or, you know, I can't get a loan, or the bank has actually cut back my credit, and I don't have the type of liquidity that I need to, you know, have my business function the way that it should. And, you know, so we're seeing small businesses come out of the woodwork and saying, you know, this issue is affecting me seriously, but we're seeing our legislators kind of addressing the issues in kind of an inadequate way, in a way that maybe isn't the most effective way of doing business. I think there are other solutions, and I think small business advocates would agree across the country. And more than that, the SBA itself is underfunded. It doesn't have the type of staffing that it needs, and you know, it's really unable to fulfill its mission as an agency.
I really feel like, and we had a top economist professor on the show yesterday talking about the bailout. I really feel like there's some strong-arming going on here, maybe a little bit of deception. I know small businessmen, and they're getting their lines of credit cut back a little bit, and as soon as this bailout comes, and it is going to come, evidently, they'll be raising interest rates and be right back in business in position to squeeze people again. So I don't know. I'm not real hopeful about it, whether it's going to be a great thing for the country or not. Under no circumstances, it's going to be great. How do you feel about it on a personal level? Do you think this is going to get things back on track, or is this just something to forestall a problem?
You know, on a personal level, I have my question. You know, I feel like anytime you address an issue in a quick and kind of reaction-driven way, you really tend to miss things. I think that in regular business, the Senate has a tendency to address things in a very deliberate, well-thought-out manner. And this bill, it just reminds me too much of mistakes that we've made in the past, where we rushed through things and, you know, thought that it was going to do good, and then it ended up coming back and biting us. And, you know, I think that that's kind of where we're heading with this thing. And so, you know, I would say that on a personal level, I think that we need to do something. But passing this bailout, I don't know that that's sufficient.
We have the problem of so many billions of dollars that were supposed to go to small business contracts that are actually going to the large corporations now. Is that something that has been unique in this administration, or is it something that's been growing over the years?
I think it's been growing over the years, and it was something that, you know, was happening to some extent, and then it's been kind of exacerbated by the current administration with kind of policy decisions, legislation that attendance on the stage. Decreases transparency, makes it harder for people to really do the types of research that they may need to do to kind of draw the connections between large companies and smaller companies and the SBA, and really to kind of find out where these dollars are flowing. I think that it's been, probably over the last, I think it's been going on for at least 20 years.
Yes.
It really has been going on for that long. We're only in 2003 started to realize the extent of the problem, and it's only gotten worse from there. And I think that just continues.
Chris, tell us, the American Small Business League, how do you work now? You've identified these problems. What do you do? What do you do to go really work on them? Do you go to Washington and lobby the people?
You bet. We really put an emphasis on, number one, bringing attention to these issues and making sure that people around the country know what's going on, and kind of mobilizing them towards action. And then kind of tier two is talking to our legislators and bringing to their attention and then making them draw the connection between the calls that they're getting and the information that we're giving them. And then the third stage is actually writing legislation and trying to get that legislation implemented on a federal level. So, we spend a lot of time in Washington. We talk to a lot of legislators. We try to maintain close relations with individual legislative offices. It's just a way of saying, well, we're here. We're a small business community, and we have a voice, and we definitely want you to hear us. The only way that's going to happen is if we have a presence. So.
I have to remind myself now and then and remind our listeners that sometimes we talk about lobbyists. Certainly not all lobbying efforts are bad, and this is one case here where it's quite good to have somebody in there working on behalf of the small guy, and there are many such organizations that work for the small guy. Chris, I want to thank you so much for being on the program again today. I really appreciate your input and really appreciate your work out there fighting for the small businessmen across the country. It's comforting to know that someone is there trying to protect the people who provide, and I'm correct in saying this, aren't they, most of the jobs in the country.
I appreciate you having me on the show, Guy, and I hope that small business owners and people out there are hearing what we're saying and hopefully mobilizing, because we need to raise our voices and let our legislators know what's going on.
You can check this out on your website. Give us the website, will you, Chris?
It's www.asbl.com.
ASBL.com. It can't be more simple than that. Chris Gunn, thank you very, very much. Good to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Chris Gunn from the American Small Business League. How many of you got your Palin bingo game out tonight? I just heard about that a couple of hours ago. I think that's hilarious. Have you got your Palin bingo card out? That's one of the coolest things I've heard in a long time. They got making these bingo cards, and instead of numbers on it, it's got words that she likes to say, like, hockey mom, maverick, glass ceiling, country first, Alaska. And so when she says that tonight, you get to put a bean or a penny or whatever on your bingo card, and the first one to get the bingo wins. I like that. She'll say Alaska how many times tonight? And Maverick. She talks like a Canadian, don't you think? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I think she sounds a whole lot like a Canadian. I think. 866-546-5254. We're going to take a quick break here now. Hey, I do want to play something for you. Since I've said Canadian, and I was going to say hillbilly Canadian, but I didn't want to go there. But anyway, I am going to go there in America. Here's your average Republican voter this year. Okay, I have a little fun with this, and keep that in mind. This is in the spirit of having a laugh or two. But this is an actor. This is an actual recording of an actual voter, okay? Here we go.
States did not need, when we're at war with the Arabs, we do not need a damn Arab president.
Hey, huh? We're not having that chance to push it.
Well, come here and tell him about cutting his head off and stuff. She didn't.
Cutting his head off?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
When you go over there to them Arab countries, they are cutting off the heads of the soldiers of our Americans. And his middle name is Hussein. And we wanna vote for somebody with a name like Barack Hussein Obama. Why don't we just vote for?
That's for that beer.
We wanna vote for somebody with a name like Barack Hussein Obama.
Why don't we cut your fucking hair?
Well, why are we electing an Arab when we're at war with Iraq and Iran? I mean, come on, American people. This don't make much sense, does it? What?
That darn don't make no much sense, does it? See, that's your average Republican voter right there. Ah, yes. Oh, my. We ain't elected no Arab. You know, it's kind of scary when you know that there are people walking around that actually their brain works like that. It is scary, don't you think? Ah, that's a beauty. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back in just a moment or two.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top story today, the right-wing blogosphere is abuzz over a forthcoming book by PBS's Gwen Ifill entitled The Breakthrough, Politics and Race in the Age of Obama. Following suit, members of the mainstream media question Ifill's objectivity to moderate the vice presidential debate. Here's Fox News' Megyn Kelly.
PBS's Gwen Ifill writing a book called The Breakthrough, Politics and Race in the Age of Obama. It focuses on Obama and other emerging African-American leaders. Critics are asking how Ifill can pen such a glowing review of Sir Obama and still be fair during this debate.
However, many fail to know that Ifill's book was made public well before her selection as moderator, and even John McCain says he's confident in Ifill's objectivity. And speaking of objectivity, here's MSNBC's Mika Brzezinski on her hopes for Governor Palin in the vice presidential debate.
It would be great if she could hit out of the ballpark tomorrow night, and that people may really like what they're hearing.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
that's some good stuff right there. Yellow. Oh, yeah. Yes, call me old-fashioned, but that's, as I mentioned on the chat room, that's one of my top five favorite groups of all time. I love ELO. It's happy music. It's good toe-tapping, sitting here in the chair, swaying back and forth music. And, gosh, I think we all need a little of that right now, don't we? Oh, things have been so, so down and dour and sad and painful lately that we probably need a little happy music. We all need a good stiff drink, maybe. Well, I'm not really a drinker, but it sounds good. yes. Wow. That, it has been tough lately, don't you think? I think the whole, all of America needs to get some Pepto-Bismol, big giant-sized bottle, and sit back and watch the news, take a little of that. Maybe not watch the news. Maybe just stay the hell away from it. Maybe we should just all walk away from this political thing for a while and this economic thing for a while. Maybe we could get it back together again. Oh, I don't know about you. Do many of you sit around worrying about this? Do many of you, of course, doing what I do here? I have to keep up on what's going on, and in order to stay well informed, have to read all this crap about the economy and what the legislators are saying. And I'm afraid to, you know, walk around with a headache once in a while after listening to these guys. I'm particularly distressed about how many of them are walking around right now. And I think it's a really damn poor statement to say, well, it's not a very good bill, but it's all we got. It's all we got. We couldn't come up with anything better. Now, I have not seen any reason, any evidence to prove that things are gone to hell by next Monday or so if they didn't take a few extra days and nail down a better bill than this. Every single one of them. I haven't heard of one of them yet say, this is a great bill. Not a one. Of course, they're covering their political asses by saying that. But there isn't a single one of them that's walking around saying that this is really a good bill. Almost all of them saying, well, yeah, it's all we got. Well, really? It wouldn't have waited a few more days? Let's face facts here. They could have taken a few more days to get this done. They could have. But we've got 435 members of the House of Representatives that are just chomping at the bit to get out there and do a little campaigning. And they want to get this over with. $700 billion? Let's not fuss around with it too much, because we got to get reelected. Sad, isn't it? Isn't that really sad that they couldn't sit down, tell the world, tell the financial world, hang on, give us 2 weeks, we're going to sit down with political experts, you know, econ professors from all over the country, people that really know and really understand what's going on and can get to the meat of the situation, have a damn hearing if you must, do what you need to do, but meet with the right people, talk to the right people that actually know, and reassure Wall Street and the country and all the creditors, hang on just a couple of weeks till we can come up with a better bill. Is that unreasonable? Instead, they put together this piece of crap. And crap it is that they passed last night in the Senate by 75 to 24. Teddy Kennedy not voting for obvious reasons. We'll talk about this bill in the second hour. Some of the things that's in it. It's criminal, really criminal. But they're buying votes with some of the pork, and it's just plain pork that they put in this. The part of it to limit compensation for executives is virtually worthless. They're going to extend till the end of 2009 individual tax breaks, including deductions for higher education costs and teachers' personal expenses. That's not that bad. They're going to increase the 100,000 FDIC to 250,000. Grant tax relief to victims of natural disasters in the Midwest and elsewhere. That's a good thing. They're going to increase personal credits against the alternative minimum tax, shielding more than 20 million taxpayers from the tax. And there's a lot of other things that go, and we'll talk about that in the second half, this second half of the program, I think. Repealing a 39-cent excise tax on wooden arrows. Gordon Smith from Oregon got that one done. who would have thunk it? They're going to have $478 million worth of tax breaks over the next decade for movie and television producers who shoot films in the United States. Hey, how about that? They'll spare 24 million American households from scheduling increase in the alternative minimum tax. NASCAR, here's the one that really got me. They put in a provision to save NASCAR track builders $109 million this year. That's right. They've got their stands full every race you see, the NASCAR, and they're going to give them $109 million tax break. Someone explain that one to me. How did that get done? I'm taking it that there must have been somebody from North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia that got that done. I don't know what I'm talking about on that. But they threw a bunch of crap in that bill that help out the people with I'm searching for the name right now. People with tax havens and the Grand Caymans and all that sort of thing, hedge fund managers, and they're gonna get it done. They're gonna get what they want out of it. Believe me. And as I said before, the champagne corks are gonna pop on Wall Street when they get this baby done. We're gonna pause for news at the top of the hour. We'll be back. You listen to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The California Nurses Association is sponsoring a new ad highlighting some of GOP Vice Presidential candidate Sarah Palin's comments. It's called One Heartbeat Away. Here's an excerpt from the ad campaign.
What is it exactly that the VP does?
What insight into Russian actions, particularly in the last couple of weeks, does the proximity of the state give you?
They're our next-door neighbors, and you can actually see Russia from land here in Alaska.
Do you agree with the Bush Doctrine?
In what respect, Charlie?
The California Nurses Association says a new study from Bragg Associates, an actuary firm, says that John McCain would have a 1 in 4 chance of dying in office from natural causes should he win the presidency. So the CNA is calling on McCain to release his full medical records. Quest workers have rejected a new 3-year contract proposal. Jesse Russell reports.
Quest workers, represented by the Communication Workers of America, voted against a new 3-year contract proposal on Tuesday. Although the authority to call a strike had been given to negotiators when the contract expired in August, both sides say negotiations are ongoing and no strike is in the forecast. 20,000 Quest employees in 13 states are represented by the CWA.
Non-union Boston transit workers have filed a class action lawsuit against the Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority, asking for the same raises recently given to unionized employees. In July, unionized workers agreed to a 4-year contract that gave them a 9% pay raise. In the past, all workers had been given raises based on the unionized workers' contracts. With the cost of running the T increasing, the decision was made to instead provide non-unionized workers who make less than $70,000 with only a 3% pay raise and cut the increase for other non-unionized workers. The non-organized workers are now seeking membership with the United Steelworkers.
Here is today's economic report. Manufacturing plunged during the month of September. According to the monthly report from the Institute of Supply Management, the manufacturing index fell to 43.5% last month. That's the lowest level since October 2001. It is also the biggest drop in 24 years. The same report also found that rising prices slowed to their lowest level in 21 months.
WIN's Labor News is now available right on your cell phone. Just dial 425-527-7001. Get your Wind Labor News on your cell phone at 425-527-7001.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
He's practicing the politics of the past. John McCain. His attacks on Barack Obama? Not true. False. Baloney. The low road. Baseless. John McCain. Same old politics. Same failed policies. Barack Obama supports a $1,000 middle class tax cut. An energy plan that takes on oil companies, develops alternative fuels, and breaks the grip of foreign oil. That's change we can believe in.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get down. Down.
Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show. We've got a great guest coming up in just a moment or two. I see the Dow ended up down right around 350 points today, right around. What is going on? They've got this passed in the Senate last night, almost assured of having it passed in the House tomorrow, and Wall Street's still nervous. Let me tell you something. I think one of the reasons Wall Street's still nervous is they know, and most of us know, I think, that this turned into about $850 billion altogether, this huge influx of money is not going to end this problem. It may stave it off for a little while, but maybe to the first of the year. But mark my word, they will be back. They will be back for more money. And somebody tell me, please. They're going to have these auctions, and to auction off these toxic assets. And whoever's running the auction, tell me how the person in charge of that auction is going to be fair to the people, where they need to buy these things for the lowest possible price. They owe that to the people to buy these assets at the absolute bottom dollar. And at the same time, do what this thing was intended to do and get the highest possible price to help these banks get liquid again. Will someone tell me how the auctioneer is going to do that, those in charge of this auction? It seems to me like the irresistible force against the immovable object here. I don't know how it's possible to be in the middle of this thing and be fair to both sides. I just don't understand. When you go buy a house, you've got a realtor representing you, and you've got a realtor representing the seller. To have the same one working both sides just doesn't work, does it? And that's what they're asking to do here with these auctions they're going to have. I've heard them talking about having Dutch auctions, reverse auctions. It's true the government is good at doing auctions. They've done a lot of auctions over the year, but I still like to know how they're going to be in a regular auction. They don't have to be fair to both sides, but in this deal, they're going to have to be fair to both sides, or they won't obtain their objective here into re-liquefying, if you will, Wall Street, while at the same time getting the best possible buy for you and me on these distressed, toxic assets. We're going to pause for a very quick break. I'll be back in just a minute with our guest, so don't go away. Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. And as promised, we have as our guest right now on the line, we have Michelle Goldberg. She's author of the book Kingdom Coming, The Rise of Christian Nationalism. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Very good to have you with us today. I wanted to talk about one of our favorite subjects on the program here lately, it seems. And I'm kind of hoping that after tonight, maybe I won't have to talk about it quite as much. You're probably hoping just the opposite since you write on this subject. But I wanted to talk
Well, I've got a feeling you're going to be talking about it whatever happens tonight.
You're probably right. You're probably right. All the expectations game being played now, setting the bar as low as possible. It's going to be interesting. We've all heard what a great debater she is. They've been saying that on the one hand, and on the other hand, well, who knows what'll happen tonight? And we've all heard the gaffes and the interviews with Katie Couric, who knew that Katie's career would be revived like it has been here in the past few days. How did you get started writing on this subject?
Writing on the religious right? Well, let's see. I've always been interested in kind of subcultures and fringe movements and things like that. So I had written years and years ago about the ex-gay movement, about other kind of aspects of what I thought was the far right, you know, something that kind of people, especially on the coast, were barely even aware of, even though it was, you know, kind of the dominant culture in a lot of the country. And then I was a senior news writer at Salon, and I started seeing this movement that I had written about before as a kind of fringe phenomenon was, you know, essentially kind of making policy and exercising power at the highest levels of government. So that's where that book came from, was to try to kind of convince people that this movement was real and, while not a majority, was really a kind of really significant factor in our politics. I started it before the 2004 election. After the 2004 election, it wasn't so necessary to convince people of that anymore, but it was necessary, I thought, to kind of show how the movement worked.
How does this link up with Sarah Palin? As if we didn't know.
Palin, in a way, she's the apotheosis of it.
It's
so interesting to me because, you know, if you look back through just news stories from the last 20 years, which is something you obviously do when you're researching a book, you'll see that ever since the religious right was first kind of burst onto the national scene, every few years a wave of stories come forward declaring it dead. And, you know, 2006 and 2007 were no exception. Every time there's a kind of step back for the movement, a leader falls, a leader dies, politician goes down in disgrace, people say, well, the religious right is dead. There's, you know, kind of a new, you know, either people are sick of religion and politics or the religious left is emerging. And yet the movement continues, not because it's necessarily growing, but because it remains the most solid, the most kind of cohesive block of the Republican Party. It continues to resurrect itself with new leadership and new institutions. And Sarah Palin, as I found when I went to Alaska, really comes out of the movement in a way that no politician on a national scale, not even George W. Bush, did. I mean, George W. Bush catered to the movement. He was sympathetic to it. He fought in some of the same terms. But the movement created Sarah Palin.
It did indeed. It did indeed. And I've found even her church, where she goes at the Wasilla, Assembly of God? Is that what it is?
Well, there's two churches. There's the Wasilla Assembly of God, which is where she grew up. She left in 2002 when she was running for lieutenant governor, but she still spends time there, speaks there, etc. But now she goes to the relatively, and relative is the word to stress, but the relatively more moderate Wasilla Bible Church.
Why the change? Do you know?
I have a feeling, as I said, 2002 was the year that she ran for lieutenant governor. And again, although the politics are not appreciably different, you know, Wasilla Bible Church, unlike the Wasilla Assembly of God, you know, they're not speaking in tongues. They're not talking about demons. They're not, you know, kind of praying for these incredibly, one of the things that they, the Assembly of God basically is part of this kind of word of faith movement in Pentecostal Christianity, in which you basically can kind of call down riches and blessings on yourself by speaking them aloud. So when I went to the church, one of the things that I found so odd about it, although this makes a lot of sense given Palin's, you know, talking about, you know, God needs to help us with this oil pipeline, is that essentially it? They were acting as if God was kind of the mayor of Wasilla or the governor of Alaska and saying, you know, we need, in the name of Jesus, release the resources so we can fix up the bathroom. The Wasilla Bible Church actually has a preacher who, again, is very, very conservative, but is thoughtful. There's not a lot of shrieking and crying and trembling. It's a more sedate, kind of more politically palatable and politically powerful. It has, you know, the people there are, it's a slightly more upper class congregation, and so it seems like it's probably a better political base for her.
Well, Michelle, you're making this sound like she switched churches for political reasons. To be on a more moderate look, and if she's true hard Pentecostal or hardcore born again right, that wouldn't be a good thing to do, would it? To change churches?
Well,
for that reason,
when I say relative, the thing is that Wasilla Bible Church, the church that she switched to, would be by most people's standards also a hard right fundamentalist church. You know, we're talking about a continuum here. So it's not that she kind of went from a right-wing church to a moderate church, but she went from a very demonstrative, you know, kind of very supernatural type of right-wing fundamentalist church to a slightly more sedate right-wing fundamentalist church.
Yes, a little bit further down toward mainstream, without the speaking in tongues and the covers over you to roll on the floor and all that sort of thing.
She still does go to the Wasilla Assembly of God. You know, she's been filmed there as recently as you know, a few weeks before she was named as the vice presidential nominee.
Well, when was this? Which church was it? Thomas Muthy? Which one? He was on the Assembly of God, wasn't
Wasilla
he?
Wasilla Assembly of God, yes.
Yes, and I've seen that video. I suppose everybody in the world has seen it by now, but I found it really bizarre, and having attended many different churches in my life, I don't recall ever hearing anybody bring up the word witchcraft and so forth in a church service. And here's the future governor of Alaska standing there listening to this as though it were normal.
Well, and as many of your listeners know, he's not just talking about witchcraft in a kind of metaphorical sense, or, you know, in an elusive sense. He was actually known in Kenya to have declared a woman in a suburb of Nairobi a witch and had her driven out of town, you know, was blaming her for causing car accidents and poverty and other kinds of disasters in this area, and, again, organized people and drove her out. So this is, one of the things that the religious right is generally quite good at, has been quite good at, is kind of belief in witchcraft and the literal working of demons in the world and various kind of end-of-day scenarios. It's not that this is particularly exotic within the context of the religious right, but they usually have a kind of better sense of what is suitable for public consumption and how to frame things in a way in which it doesn't absolutely terrify, you know, people who kind of initiate it.
Do you think that the voting public, the Republican side of the ticket in particular, do you think that they look down upon this Muthy and all that sort of thing? Or are they willing to accept it? Obviously, according to the polls lately, maybe not.
The Republican side of the ticket?
Yes.
I think that Republicans in general, I mean, again, the Republican Party has become this kind of rump institution of, you know, kind of plutocrats and fundamentalists, with maybe a few people who still kind of hang on out of loyalty to what the Republican Party was when it was a more respectable kind of body, or when it was, you know, legitimately conservative. But I think that for many conservatives, you know, they simply see any criticism of Palin, any kind of recognition that this church is something different than we've seen in kind of, you know, mainstream religious life in America. They all see that as part of this, a kind of war on Christianity, a war on people of faith, which is a kind of integral part of their worldview. you know, this sense of religious people and believers and people being persecuted by, you know, secular elites. And so this full narrative plays into that to a certain extent. But people who are, you know, real conservatives who maybe were, you know, attracted to the movement because, or attracted to the party because of, you know, things like, you know, kind of budget issues or defense issues, I imagine that some of them are disturbed, and independents are clearly disturbed by what they're seeing, Sarah Palin.
Well, speaking of wars, a war on their church and so forth that you're speaking about, that the Republicans see it that way. I know you've written about anti-Semitism in these churches being fairly rampant. It is, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, actually, I wouldn't say that anti-Semitism is fairly rampant in evangelical churches per se. I think that one of the things that I thought was most striking about Moosey was that, you know, he got a lot of attention for that witchcraft quote, but there was also a quote, there was also a statement that he made right before she joined him on stage, in which he started talking about how Christians need to take control of the financial system the way that the Israelites have done. You know, which was a pretty kind of, struck me as a pretty obvious reference to this kind of, you know, anti-Semitic conviction that Jews control the financial industry. And there are other things, you know, her new church, her kind of moderate church, has had, you know, had Jews for Jesus speaker recently, spoke about, you know, kind of violence in Israel being God's punishment for unbelief and for their refusal to accept Jesus Christ. What I argued was not that Sarah Palin is an anti-Semite. I mean, I have no idea. What I said was that her churches and the preachers that she consorts with are actually significantly more hostile to Jews as Jews than, say, Jeremiah Wright. You know, Jeremiah Wright has never said anything, although he had, you know, troubling connections with Louis Farrakhan, but he's never said anything that kind of smacked of old medieval anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. And what I think that one reason that she's gotten a pass on that and that her churches have gotten a pass on that is because they are fanatically pro-Israel. And it's really important, I think, for people to realize that you can be very much in favor of the policies of the most far-right people in Israel without being in favor of, you know, the kind of continuing existence and health of the Jewish people, because she, or at least her churches, espouse a kind of end times theology in which the, you know, second coming of Jesus Christ will be preceded by the return of the Jews to Israel and a big third world war in the Middle East, after which, you know, all those Jews who haven't accepted Jesus Christ will be consigned swiftly to hell, while everyone else will have a thousand years of, well, Christians will enjoy a thousand years of peace on earth. And so, in a way, the
You know, I actually tried to explain that to a Jewish friend of mine recently. He knew nothing about it, and he didn't believe me.
It's very interesting, and it seems so. It seems so wild that it can be hard to make people believe that there are, you know, people active in our political process who take this stuff seriously. But you know, I'm certainly far from the first person to write about this stuff. You know. My favorite quote in the entire world about this kind of weird alliance comes from Leah Wieslitz, editor at the New Republic, you know, far from an anti-Zionist, far from a lefty, but someone, he called it a grim comedy of mutual condescension, or no, a grim comedy of mutual contempt. Which is, you know, in that these two sides, the evangelical Christians and the very right-wing conservative Jews, are happy to use each other, both in the kind of conviction that the other's beliefs about what's to come are so ridiculous as not to have to be taken seriously.
Oh yeah, my Jewish friend, I tried to explain that. He just looked at me and said, come on, why would you try and tell me something like that? So I don't know.
Well, ask him to Google premillennial dispensationalism.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I just found that very interesting. You actually went to Alaska to research your church.
I did. Well, yeah, to research not her church so much as to her connections with the religious right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. What do you predict for tonight? You got a prediction for tonight for the great debate?
You know, it's a little foolish, and I could, you know, I could so easily be wrong, but I think that now we have a new narrative that's developed. People are saying, well, she's going to come back. She's going to impress people. She's going to be better than we all expect. I'm not so sure about that. I actually watched some of her debates at a news station in Anchorage, some of her old debates. I don't think she's that great. She's not that great of a debater. She clearly knows how to talk about the oil pipeline and Alaska issues, but I still think they should be worried.
I think so as well. I don't want to slight the great state of Alaska, but when they talked about her debate, and I've been to Alaska, and when they talked about her great debating abilities in Alaska, I said, well, it was Alaska. Things are a bit different there. And you don't have to be able to go out and be one of the great orators of all time or something to do well in a debate in Alaska necessarily. So things are just a bit different there. Michelle, I want to thank you very much for being on the program today. I appreciate hearing your comments. You write for, what, The Guardian sometimes?
I've recently been working on my second book, which is going to come out in April. But lately I've been writing for The Nation, The Guardian, sometimes The New Republic.
Okay. And, your latest article about the Palin's preacher problem, did it come from The Guardian?
Yeah, I did a story. The Nation sent me to Alaska to do a story about Palin and the religious right, and then I used some of what I found there to write another piece for the British paper, The Guardian, about Palin's preacher problem.
Well, I read The Guardian as often as I possibly can, so it's one of my favorites. Michelle Goldberg, thanks so much for being on the program today. We all appreciate it very much. Author of the book Kingdom Coming, The Rise of Christian Nationalism. And what's going to be the title of your new book once again?
My new book is called The Means of Reproduction, Sex, Power, and the Future of the World. And it's about the global battle over reproductive rights and women's rights.
Oh, okay.
It'll be out in April.
All right. We'll look for it. Michelle, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Michelle Goldberg, ladies and gentlemen. And talking about Sarah Palin and her church, I don't know that that subject will come up tonight. It ought to. It really ought to. I would take a different tact than I'm hearing about tonight. I'm talking about how everybody says that Joe Biden has to walk on eggshells tonight. I don't believe that's necessarily true, but we'll see. Will Joe be the gentleman? Will Joe pull her chair out for her when she sits down and all that? Will Joe be very chivalrous, or will Joe treat her like one of the guys? I don't know. I don't know what to expect there. I really, really don't know what to expect. I don't think anybody knows really what to expect, and that's why it's probably going to be interesting. I hope when this debate tonight is over with that I'm not as bored as as I was after that other one. That one about killed me. That was bad. We're going to pause for a break, and we'll be back right after this. Have you heard this about John McCain talking about how the Gwen Ifill, you know, that was fine, that they were going to have Gwen Ifill, just fine. And now it's not fine all of a sudden. It's just not fine anymore. But at first it was, and this is McCain today. Changed his mind a little bit.
So I have to ask you this, because there's been a lot of debate, speaking of the debate, in the last 24 hours about the moderator, Gwen Ifill, and the fact that she's releasing this book on Inauguration Day that is a lot about Barack Obama. I know you've gone on record yesterday as saying that you don't really have a problem with this, that you think she'll be fair. But do you actually think it could work to your advantage, because people will really be looking closely at her questions?
Listen, frankly, I wish that they had picked a moderator that isn't writing a book favorable to Barack Obama. I mean, let's face it. And but I have to have confidence that Gwen Ifill will treat this in a professional, as a professional journalist as she is. Frankly, I would imagine that there's other people out there who aren't writing a book that's going to be on Inauguration Day favorable to Senator Obama. But that's life. Look, life isn't fair. I mentioned earlier in our program.
There's something in your eyes. Is everything all right? You look up to the sky. You long for something more. Darling, give me your right hand. I think I understand. Follow me and you will never have to wish again. I know that after tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. By the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 no. Tell me how you feel. And if I'm getting in, I'll tell you where to stay. You tell me where to stay. Da-da-da-darling, way above the clouds and high above the stars. Through the unknown black holes, no one knows where we are. But we'll return to Earth and do it all over again. Cause I know that after tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, that tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look about the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, that tonight, you don't have to look about the stars. But come away with me. Come fly away with me. Just for one night, no one will ever know, no, no, no. Darling, I will leave you satisfied forever past time. You don't have to hide, you're free to fly. That after tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. At the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. At the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know that after tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. At the end of tonight, you don't have to look up at the stars. And I know if the love is alright, you don't have to look up at the stars. No, 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 I know. But again, not tonight, we're looking down a phone that from heaven. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, no, oh, na, na, na.
Hey, you're listening to The Guy James Show, proud member of the Head On Radio Network. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We've got a debate tonight. You'd think it was the debate of all time. I must admit I'm looking forward to it myself. Clearly Sarah Palin is the underdog tonight, and she's going to have to communicate a little more clear and a little more profoundly than she has as of late. And someone sent me an email today, said, can you actually earn a college degree even in 6 years from the University of Idaho with this this level of fractured English? They were talking about her her answer about the Supreme Court. My God, fractured English, yes. Yeah, and that is one of her statements. It makes us want to communicate in clearer and more profoundly with the electorate. Can you really graduate with the English like that? And I was thinking after hearing her talk for a while, after hearing her, and believe me, as you know, I'm not an English major, and I sometimes butcher the language, but I don't claim to be anything else, not running for vice president either. But I was thinking the way she does just kill the language now and then. Do you suppose she's actually the secret daughter of Norm Crosby? Do some of you folks a little bit younger than I am, do you know who Norm Crosby is? He's the guy that he's a comedian that just butchers the language. She reminds me of Norm Crosby now and then. She really does. What do you think will happen tonight? Will she come out with guns a-blazing? Will she be meek and mild tonight? Will she be all intellectual? Will she try that? She can't do that. But maybe I was thinking, maybe this is all a scam. Maybe it's all been a ruse. Maybe she'll come out tonight with both guns a-blazing and show that she's really a genius somehow. Maybe they've been hiding this and letting the polls lapse a little bit. Bob liked the Norm Crosby thing. yes. Norm Crosby. I hadn't thought of Norm Crosby in ages either. Guy used to make me laugh a lot. But maybe they've just lowered the bar so far. And like I said, if she shows up with a matching pair of shoes tonight, Mary, everybody said, my God, look at the woman. She's great. She's great. And I see on the chat room, they're all talking about ways to play the Palin bingo game tonight. They're going to modify the letter. Says she's going to modify the bingo game so that every time I check a square, I take a shot of brandy. Well, that'll work. A lot of people are going to have a lot of fun with that, I think. It will be interesting. That's for certain. Mark Bonner sends me a email about the big lie, and I heard this last night. McDonald's reported yesterday that none of their franchisees have been unable to borrow necessary cash. Who started that big lie that we've been hearing for a couple of weeks? That's true. That is true. And have you, I did want to mention, get this in before all the Sarah Palin stuff in the rest of the show, but have you looked at the electoral map lately? Wow. You'll know now why. If you take a good look at the electoral map, you're going to see that, they're going to get mean about it. They're going to get very mean about it. They have to. I shouldn't say they have to, but it's not looking good for the Republicans right now. And if I can bring this up here, I wanted to briefly go over this electoral map. Ohio's leaning blue. Florida's leaning blue. Virginia is leading blue. Imagine that. Barack Obama's got a 50-46 lead. That's a compilation of five different polls in Virginia. And North Carolina's tied at the moment. Can you imagine that? Indiana is getting close. Obama's only behind a couple of points in Indiana. This has been a hardcore Republican state, Indiana has. Missouri is closing up. McCain had a nice lead in Missouri. It's down to one. And now with Colorado and Nevada leaning toward Obama, I tell you, folks, there's the possibility of a real ass-kicking here. There is. Some of the states, Kentucky's still 15 up. West Virginia, come on. What's going on up there? McCain, 6 points up. That is narrowed. That is narrowed considerably. Obama with a decent lead in Pennsylvania now, about seven, leading by six in Michigan, leading by six in Wisconsin, and Obama leading in Ohio by two. Glad those Buckeyes, and in Florida by two. So if this election were to be held today, it'd be a landslide. It would be 338 to Obama and 185 to McCain with ties in only 15 electoral votes. So things are looking good. Things are looking very good, barring any sort of a disaster here coming up. Why, I think things are looking very, very nice. Very nice. 866-546-5254. There was a letter to the editor in the New York Times today from a lady named Rachel Kleinfeld. And I found it interesting, and I thought you might want to hear about it. Governor Palin, as we both know, this is from Rachel Kleinfeld, Alaskans are a special breed. And I would break in here and say amen to that. I grew up in Fairbanks, a few hundred miles north of Wasilla. I was proud to live on the frontier, far from civilization, and like many Alaskans, I lived in a log house on a dirt road with no city water, sewer system, or trash collection. We didn't get much from our government, and we didn't want much. I love my frontier state, but the first thing I learned when I moved to the lower 48 was how unlike the rest of the country Alaska is. And let me break in here once again and say, do you remember Sarah McCallum telling Katie Couric that Alaska is a microcosm of the whole U.S.? Well, I would say au contraire. That is just absolutely not true. But back to the letter. How would you govern America when, as mayor and governor, you hardly had to provide basic public services? In Wasilla, less than a tenth of the town is connected to a sewer system. Alaska's economy runs on oil proceeds. They don't even pay income tax. And despite their disdain for Washington, we're given hundreds of millions of dollars from the federal government each year. How would you handle our financial crisis when you've never had to balance a budget while tax revenue fell? Well, that's a good letter, and I think it's very appropriate because Alaska is not a microcosm of the rest of the U.S. Definitely not. They've been criticizing Katie Couric for having gotcha questions. Gotcha questions. And I went back and even watched a couple of those interviews to find these gotcha questions, and I think you're really pushing when you're saying that a gotcha question is asking you what magazines you read and newspapers. Isn't that kind of, do you think that's a gotcha question? I think that's an interesting question to ask somebody to get at where they're coming from. What newspapers and magazines do you read? I know you can find out a lot about me if you ask the questions about what I like to read and where my interests are and where my political leanings are, perhaps, although I try and read both right and left. And is asking Supreme Court cases you've disagreed with, is that a gotcha question? I don't think so. You're ready to put somebody a heartbeat away from the presidency? Wouldn't you like to know how they feel about the Supreme Court? Wouldn't that give you some insight into what kind of a person they may appoint? After all, we did hear on the news the insurance actuarial say that, and let's face it, sorry to have to say this, but it's true that at John McCain's age, when he's in office, there's a 25% chance that he might die. Or any of us that are that age. So it's not inappropriate to ask the question. Not inappropriate at all about Supreme Court cases. That would give us tremendous insight into what she thinks about the court. I mean, did she agree with Dred Scott? Did she agree with Brown versus the Board of Education? Did she agree with Bush v. Gore? Of course, she did. But they're digging deep right now to come up with something, anything, and they're beginning to look very desperate. When they accuse Katie Couric of coming up with gotcha questions in those interviews, that just doesn't cut it. It really, really, really doesn't cut it. Not at all. And the media has repeatedly asserted that Palin faces low or lowered expectations in debate, and yet they praise her debating skills. I don't know. I've seen her debating skills in videos of her Alaskan debates. I wasn't impressed. Not at all. Something I did in college. I was on the debate team. Very, very enjoyable. Resolved, there should be a national program of public works for the unemployed. I wonder if they still do it the same way. You pick a pro or con side, you stay with it all year long, you use the same subject all year long. I wonder if they still do it that way. Been a long time. Speaking of college, in a move suggesting how this credit crisis could disrupt American higher education, Wachovia Bank has limited the access of nearly 1,000 colleges to $9.3 billion the bank has held for them in short-term investment fund. In a move that sent shockwaves among colleges, Wachovia announced Monday that it would limit access to the fund to 10% of each college's account value. Imagine that. A $9.3 billion being held in short-term investment funds for the colleges. The colleges are only going to have access to 10% of it. They might take a serious hit over that. Very serious hit. One of my favorite authors is Thomas Frank. We've had Thomas on the program, What's the Matter with Kansas, and his new book, all of a sudden I can't think the name of it. Terrific read. He took a shot at this. So there's no way to measure the number of people who took out mortgages they knew they couldn't afford, of course. But for what it's worth, a 2007 report by the Mortgage Bankers Association reports that the FBI estimates 80% of all reported fraud losses arise from fraud-for-profit schemes that involve industry insiders. What does this mean? This means the lenders, not the borrowers. Just imagine the flights of fancy that the theory of borrower malevolence and Wall Street victimization requires conservatives to take. All these no-account folks, you see, got together. This is what they would have you believe, says Thomas Franks, that all these no-account folks got together and forced investment banks to engineer subprime mortgages into highly leveraged securities. And then all these no-account folks tricked all manner of hedge funds and pension funds and financial institutions into buying these lousy products. And just for good measure, these struggling homeowners then persuaded bond rating agencies to misrepresent the risk associated with these securities. Now imagine what such a fantastic scheme, if true, would mean for capitalism itself. This economic system, glorified by all, dominates the globe today, bidding prices up and down, forcing entire nations to change their ways to better suit its needs. And yet, it is so fragile that when challenged by the weakest members of society and a handful of community organizers, it simply crumbles. Thank goodness the Soviets never figured this out, says Thomas Franks. That's quite a conspiracy he described right there. My, oh, my. Oh, yes. And I see the Republicans, most notably the 527, is it 527 or 547? Anyway, you know. The Vets for Freedom, here they are back again. The Vets for Freedom, they've got caught red-handed hiring frat boys to protest the debates. And what they do is they send him an email, and this has been posted on the internet, the actual memo. They put a memo out to these fraternity boys. Hey, boys, if you participate in this tonight, we'll buy your lunch, we'll provide you with signs, and we'll make a sizable donation to your fraternity, to your organization. And that way, they got them to go out with anti-Obama signs at the debates. And they've said, no. We didn't really mean that. And if that was happening, it's not going to happen anymore because we didn't do that. Huh. Paying frat boys to protest. I love it. Well, I wanted to mention a little something about John McCain today. There is a fabulous article in the new Rolling Stones. You have got to see it. You might learn more about John McCain than you want to know, and we've described some of this on this program, but you want to find out about the real John McCain, the entire nation should be required to read this Rolling Stone. And let me just read a bit of it. At Fort McNair, an army base located along the Potomac River in the nation's capital, a chance reunion takes place one day between two former POWs. It's the spring of 1974, and Navy Commander John Sidney McCain III has returned home from the experience in Hanoi that, according to legend, transformed him from a callow and reckless youth into a serious man of patriotism and purpose. Walking along the grounds at Fort McNair, McCain runs into John Jamisi, an Air Force lieutenant colonel who was also imprisoned and tortured in Vietnam. McCain is studying at the National War College, a prestigious graduate program he had to pull strings with the Secretary of Navy to get into. Jamisi is enrolled on his own merit at the Industrial College of the Armed Forces in the building next door. There's a distance between the two men that belies their shared experience in North Vietnam. Call it an honor gap. Like many American POWs, McCain broke down under torture and offered a confession to his North Vietnamese captors. Jamisi, in contrast, was attempted two daring escapes, and for the second, he was brutalized for a month with daily torture sessions that nearly killed him. His partner in the escape, Lieutenant Colonel Ed Atterbury, didn't survive the mistreatment. But Jamisi never said a disloyal word and for his heroism was awarded two Air Force Crosses, one of the service's highest distinctions. McCain would later hail him as one of the toughest guys I ever met. On the grounds between the two brick colleges, the chit-chat between the scion of the four-star admirals and the son of a prizefighter turns to their academic travels. Both colleges sponsor a trip abroad for young officers to network with military and political leaders in a distant corner of the globe. I'm going to the Middle East, Jamisi said. Turkey, Kuwait, Lebanon, Iran. Why are you going to the Middle East? McCain asked dismissively. It's a place we're probably going to have some problems, Jamisi says. Why? Where are you going to, John? Oh, I'm going to Rio. Why the hell are you going to go? Why are you going to Rio for? McCain, a married father of three, shrugs and says, I got a better chance of getting laid. Jamisi, who went on to serve as chief war planner for the U.S. Air Forces in Europe and commander of a wing of the Strategic Air Command, was not surprised. He said, McCain says his life changed while he was in Vietnam, and he is now a different man. But he's still the undisciplined, spoiled brat that he was when he went in. I believe that says a lot about John McCain. That's coming from one of his fellow officers in the Air Force. Well, he's the Air Force. John McCain was in the Navy. So, comrades in arms, but one with a notably different attitude than the other. Don't believe everything you hear about John McCain. He's not as bad or not as good as reports would have you believe. He's another man that went to war, was caught, was put into prison, suffered through it, as many have. And that's the end of it. He deserves credit for that. But he's not the great hero that they would try and sell, that they are trying to sell. I want to thank you for joining us this week on the program. I've had a good time on the program this week. I didn't get a chance to talk. There's an article in Salon about how John McCain's people are ghostwriting letters to the editor for McCain supporters to sign and how they thought they can be. And I think I've seen them even on our local paper. You can tell. You can tell when these letters have been solicited and mass mailed and all that. So they're stooping to everything they can. They're behind right now. They understand that. They're way behind. Things are looking very grim for the McCain campaign right now. And I don't want to come out and say it's over because you never know what's going to happen. Anything can happen. It gives me reason to be very positive of how things are going right now. And who knows, they might come up with some fantastic plus on their side somehow, but I don't think so. I really think that things are looking good for the Obama campaign. I don't think they're looking good for the economy. This bailout, I'm saying right now, I want to go on record that it's a mistake. It'll prove to be an even more horrific mistake than we think it is right now. That's how I feel about it. Thanks for listening to the program today. Always enjoyable to have all of you with us here on the Head On Radio Network on the Guy James Show. It's a pleasure knowing you're there each and every day that we're with you. And I enjoy it just as much as you do, maybe more. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to Billy Shears, music director. Thanks to Bob Kincaid and Ben Birch and everybody at Head On. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Later, gang.